Now we're looking at the latest COVID news. A number of states around the country are reaching intensive care unit capacity as the Delta variant continues to spread, putting the U.S. near hospitalization numbers that hadn't been seen since the peak in January of this year. But it's not all bad news. The FDA granted full approval to the Pfizer vaccine last week. Since then, there's been a 17% increase in the average number of Americans getting their first shot each week. We're talking about the pandemic, where we're at today, what the future might hold, and we can answer some of your questions. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What is on your mind? What are you wondering about when it comes to COVID-19? Vaccines? The possibility of booster shots? Mask wearing? Do you have kids under 12? What do you want to know about kids and COVID? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Dr. Patrick Remington is an expert in public health and preventive medicine and an emeritus professor at the UW-Madison Department of Population Health Sciences. Dr. Remington, welcome back to Central Time.
Good to be back, Rob.
We've talked a lot since early last year about COVID-19 and its progression. What do you have your eye on the most right now, Dr. Remington?
Well, I think, first of all, looking back, much of what has happened has been predictable and preventable. We knew that this virus had the potential to mutate. It does so every time it replicates within 2 or 3 weeks, you might have a new variant. And we just know from basic virology or biology that over time, these mutations might find one that is more competitive, better at infecting people. And so it will select out. And that's what happened. The Delta variant emerged in England and basically has become the predominant strain. So we knew that. We also knew a lot about vaccines. We knew that they provided tremendous protection for individuals, but we also knew that vaccines aren't perfect. They don't last forever. So we suspected that over time there might be the need to use a booster. So I think one of the things is just to go back and realize that we saw much of this coming. It might not have been talked about in the press or in the public. But a lot of this was certainly predictable and some of it preventable if we'd just done a better job as a society at doing safe practices and getting everyone vaccinated.
Looking at Florida now, one of our hot spots in the country, a handful of southern states seeing high vaccination numbers. And hear me out here. I look at last year, Florida peaked a couple months before Wisconsin did. Right now, Florida has vaccination rates in the ballpark of Wisconsin and patchy. Some counties much higher vaccination rates, some counties lower. That makes me wonder if we should be worried that come late October, we have the risk at least of being a Midwestern hotspot for the illness. What are your thoughts? What would it take to prevent that?
Well, certainly remember last year, the Midwest was a hotspot. We were wondering why beginning in September and then certainly through November when our cases peaked. We thought it was a combination of a number of things, going indoors, going back to school, and obviously not having the benefit of a vaccine. So that could certainly happen again. Although we are in a different place, we have now over half of the population in Wisconsin is fully vaccinated. That's the glass half full. But we still have many people who are unvaccinated, and that's the empty half of the glass. So I think there's a great opportunity that as FDA has approved the Pfizer vaccine, that may assure people that this is certainly safe and effective, and we may move that needle a bit more. And then unfortunately, with so many people getting infected, and maybe three times as many people have been infected and have not been diagnosed, we are getting to a point where we have lots of people either vaccinated or having had illness. So I think we're in a different place than we were a year ago. But you always worry that if And if another state is struggling, that could just portend our future in a couple of months.
I want to focus on some of the good news. It seems like vaccines are still very effective, even with the Delta variant out there. The hospitalization numbers, correct me if I'm wrong, overwhelmingly people who are unvaccinated. Same with fatalities from COVID-19, if I'm not mistaken. What do we know at this point about the effectiveness of the vaccines?
Well, the vaccine is incredibly effective. It is most effective in preventing serious illness. Our immune system is very complex. In fact, I've had to get out my immunology book from a few years ago to sort of study again how the immune system works. We have our frontline defenses, antibodies in our nasal secretions and in our saliva. And those frontline antibodies will find viruses like SARS-CoV-2 and bind it and not allow us to get infected. But it's pretty easy to overwhelm those antibodies. And then the virus gets inside our body. Well, we have circulating antibodies in our bloodstream, and those will bind the antibody. But the Delta variant divides very, very rapidly. So it can even overwhelm those. And fortunately, there's a third line of defense, which is our T cell. These are called cell-mediated immunity. It lives in a bone marrow and organs. And those cells, their immunity lasts a long time. And, you know, they go to work and fight the infection and prevent us from getting really sick. So when you get vaccinated, you have good protection sort of up in the front lines, circulating in the bloodstream, but also that deep-seated immunity. And that last one is what keeps us from getting very sick. We may get infected. We may actually infect others, but we're much less likely to get very sick if you've been vaccinated.
Talking to Dr. Patrick Remington, expert in public health and preventive medicine, emeritus professor at UW-Madison's Department of Population Health Sciences, looking at the latest COVID-19 news, the Delta variant, vaccination rates, vaccination efforts, and more. You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page what is on your mind. Let's go to a caller now. Bill is with us in Bruce. Bill, hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What'd you want to bring up?
I've had a fair amount of diversity training with the past jobs I've had, and I'm really curious to know why there's nothing being covered about the racism, bigotry of the non-vaccinated. I mean, if we treated blacks, Latinos, Native Americans the way we're treating the unvaccinated right now, there'd be class action lawsuits, politicians hopping on board to see how many brownie points they could make, but there's absolutely nothing that's being said about it.
Thanks for the call, Bill. Of course, vaccination status isn't a race, Dr. Remington. But, Bill, I think leads to an interesting question about, you know, what is the right way to reach out to people who aren't vaccinated to try to convince them? And sometimes yelling at people doesn't get the result you want. What do you think, Dr. Remington?
Well, that's a good point. Yes, from the perspective of a decision that one makes, that's not in a way a protected class like someone's race or gender. So I think, but that being said, that's not a license to really have conflict within communities or even within families. I think if people choose not to be vaccinated, they need to understand that there's two types of risk. One is the risk to yourself, and you certainly have the ability to make that decision. And we allow people to drink themselves into a stupor in their home. We allow people to smoke cigarettes in their home. But we draw the line when that behavior harms others. So we don't let people drink and drive, or we arrest them if they get caught. We don't allow people to smoke cigarettes in airplanes anymore, or in daycare centers, or in restaurants, because that's an individual decision that harms others. So I think that's the difficult thing here, that many people who've chosen not to be vaccinated feel that they have the right to do that because they can take a risk, and that's certainly a choice to do that. But where it crosses the line is if that choice harms others. If their choice not to be vaccinated means they get infected and infect others, family members or other people they run into, then that's a choice that really has harmed others. And that's why we have public health rules and laws to encourage or sometimes make it a law that people have to, they cannot drink and drive. You can't smoke here, because those are individual behaviors that don't just affect you. They harm others.
We're picking up our talk now about the latest COVID news and your questions with Dr. Patrick Remington. He's an emeritus professor at the UW-Madison Department of Population Health Sciences. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question about what you're seeing in the news about COVID-19, about the precautions that are being taken? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go back to your calls now. Owen is with us in De Pere. Owen, hello.
Good afternoon, and thank you. I was calling to see if there is a difference in immunity between having the COVID-19 and not having the COVID-19, but having the vaccine.
Great question, Owen, and I think, Dr. Remington, one that a lot of researchers are looking at very closely, immunity from having COVID-19 versus from having just the vaccine.
Yeah, the general findings today is that the vaccine provides a better level of immunity, at least in the short run, because we basically control the exposure, the stimulation of the our immune system. But the information that we have on the efficacy of the vaccine has been determined through a clinical trial, randomizing people to get a vaccine and not. And that's the best kind of science. We can say with very good certainty when we see differences in disease rates in a vaccine trial that we know that that's due to the vaccine. So we really have good evidence on vaccine efficacy. The problem with studies that look at the efficacy of getting COVID versus not is there are a lot of other factors that differ between people who happen to get COVID and people who don't. That's not a randomized experiment. That's something that happens by people's choice, by their other behaviors. So it could be those other factors that affect the difference between somebody who's gotten the disease and somebody who hasn't. I think the best evidence is that not to focus on the vaccine or the efficacy of the vaccine versus natural illness, is to focus on the consequences. The vaccine is extremely safe, one of the safest vaccines ever produced. Hundreds of millions of doses have been administered with no deaths that I've I read just yesterday that there have been no deaths related and very few complications. That's not the case with people who get sick. We know that we're at 600,000, more than a half a million people have died, maybe 15% higher death rate in this year from this pandemic. So if you're going to get, if you're looking for immunity, certainly don't take the path of natural disease. That comes with serious risks. The vaccine is a much better way to get your immunity.
Owen, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Mary joins us now in Pewaukee. Mary, hello.
Hi. Yes, thanks for taking my call. And my grandson is 14 years old, and I think you basically just answered it, which is what I thought, where he has said in the past that he doesn't want to get it. There was some symptom of the vaccination that he was worried about. And my feeling is, the COVID, if you get it health-wise, or, even if you don't die from it, the symptoms could be lifelong. But he had mentioned something about young boys and their back, their BACK, their back. And I never heard of anything like this. Have you heard of anything that he might be referring to so I can kind of push him towards getting that vaccination to keep him safe?
Mary, thanks for the call. Any particular side effects from the vaccine that's being researched for younger boys in this case? And then can you stack up concerns about that versus the risks of COVID, Dr. Remington?
Well, again, I haven't studied really the specific potential for vaccine side effects in younger people. I do know that the vaccine trials have shown that vaccines are not safe and effective in children 12 to 17 years of age. So if there are any risks, those risks are very small. And we know the illness carries a serious risk. Again, one of the things that people point out is that kids are less likely to get seriously ill, which is true. But what does it mean to be less likely? Is it 1 in 1,000 or 1 in 10,000? The problem is that when you take that very low risk and multiply it by the entire population of young people in this state or in the country, you come up with a lot of people, a lot of kids who will get really sick and some of whom will die. So we have to be really careful with these statements that it's not very dangerous or the risk is very low when potentially the entire population right now, again, no, children under the age of 12 don't have the opportunity to be vaccinated. So we have to protect them the best we can until such a time as we have a vaccine.
Thanks a lot for that call, Mary. We'll go now to Lou in northern Wisconsin. Lou, hello.
Hey, good afternoon. Actually, two things. While you were talking, it brought up another point that we do not know the long term of the vaccines. So there is hesitancy regarding getting the vaccine for, with many people regarding that, the long term. And second of all, I would like to know why physicians are not pushing keeping the body healthy through food choices and activity. I see a lot of people who are at the store and they've got carts of sugar and fat, and it's obvious they don't exercise, but yet they want this magic bullet. They want a magic wand to make everything go away and be perfect, and they don't have to work for it. So this is why I would like physicians to be tough on their patients.
Lou, thanks for the call. Dr. Remington, you and I have talked for years about you wanting people to have better nutrition and get activity. That said, that alone is not a magic bullet against COVID, right?
Well, it's not, but I would agree with the caller. I mean, I don't think this is an either-or proposition. Mm-hmm. I think every physician would want to advise their patient to be healthy, to eat right, to exercise, and that is hard in today's society. So certainly promote healthy lifestyles. I don't think we need to pit sort of healthy living and wellness against the vaccines. In fact, they go together very well. If you engage in healthy lifestyle and you maintain a good body weight and don't smoke, you now are in a low risk category. But if you add a vaccine to that, one that, again, that has been shown to be extremely safe. And although, yes, we have not studied this vaccine for decades, but as time goes on, every day that goes on where we don't see an increase in any long-term adverse effects of that vaccine is more evidence that it's safe and effective. That cannot be said for the disease. I can't emphasize that enough. This disease, each day, just today, I read yet another concern about long-term complications of COVID infection. So it's not a question of, is the vaccine safe or not? It's a question, is the vaccine a better choice than being at risk of getting the illness? And it is absolutely the safer, healthier choice.
Thanks for that call. In our last few minutes, Dr. Remington, some good news. Apparently, as I said at the beginning, vaccination rates seem to be going up again after lagging for some months. Are you encouraged by that just in our last half a minute or so?
Well, I am encouraged. I think, again, I completely understand people's hesitancy and concern about putting a needle in your arm and the biology of RNA vaccines and adenovirus agents that help us get immunity. But rely on the fact that health experts around the world have studied this and know that this is a safe and effective vaccine. And don't just do it for yourself. This is one where getting vaccinated will help you help others. It'll protect the health of others, protect the health of the community. So I think it's the best, single best thing we can do today is just get your vaccine.
Dr. Remington, thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks, Rob.
Dr. Patrick Remington is an expert in public health and preventive medicine and an emeritus professor at the UW-Madison Department of Population Health Sciences. He joined us today for a look at some of the latest COVID-19 news related to the Delta variant, the vaccines, and more, and to help answer some of your questions along the way.